Hi, Alan Saunders here, and today on The Philosopher's Zone, the construction of innocence, and especially how we project our ideas about innocence onto children. Our guest this week is Joanne Faulkner, a fellow in the School of History and Philosophy at the University of New South Wales, and the author of a new book called The Importance of Being Innocent: Why We Worry About Children. Now, one of my favourite poems is W.B. Yeats's Prayer for My Daughter. Here, the word innocence is used in three different ways. He talks about the murderous innocence of the sea, which suggests not just that the sea murders innocently, that's to say without intending to murder, but that there's something murderous about its innocence. Then he talks about the soul recovering its radical innocence, and radical, of course, means appertaining to the roots. Finally, in what is perhaps the most famous line of the poem, he asks, "How but in custom and in ceremony are beauty and innocence born?" That suggests that innocence is not radical, but that it can be an achievement. Joanne Faulkner, do you have a comment on these views of the matter?
Yes, I mean, they're quite untraditional, I guess, in their source. I think Yeats would be drawing on Nietzsche's understanding of the innocence of becoming. He was influenced by Nietzsche. And the way that that innocence is a kind of countercultural understanding of innocence as, in a sense, devoid of morality. So I guess there are senses of that in the way that we use innocence, but it's quite background to the way that we think of children as innocent, for example.
We think of children as innocent. What do we mean when we think of children as innocent? We don't think of innocence as something that they are becoming. We think of them as being born innocent into the world.
Yes. We see them as the kind of kernel of what humanity should be and might be were it not for the kinds of compromises that we need to make in order to be political subjects and to exist in society. So the child is seen as somehow, in a sense, separate from our ethical and political life.
Turning to your book, you talk about the audacious conceit of parenthood. What did you mean by that?
I guess I'm talking about at that stage of the book, the kind of enormous burden that is taken on. The meaning of parenthood in our culture is this kind of ultimate responsibility. So it's something that when adults become parents, that feels like something that's quite beyond them, that they have to live up to, and that this is a kind of rebirth into another kind of identity, one that's more serious perhaps, that's ultimately responsible.
We also tend to see them as constantly in danger, constantly on the edge of a fall. I mean, is that a realistic view of children? I mean, should we see them in that light?
Well, we overburden children with this idea. And the way that I frame this in the book is in terms of the fable of the fall in the Bible. So the idea that there is this state of priority before we enter the human condition that is somehow elevated, that is ultimately protected by a superhuman being, and that once any kind of curiosity about morality and about what lies beyond the garden creeps into there, then we're discarded from that state. Now, that by placing children notionally in that state as prior to the kind of fall that adults have already gone through, we do set them up as on the precipice of a fall, in a sense, because any kind of curiosity they have and any kind of knowledge about the world that creeps in ultimately contaminates that innocence and then compromises our relationship to them.
But if you look at the biblical story of the fall, it's clear that the fall was necessary if we were going to grow up, wasn't it?
That's right, yes. Yes, I mean, it's the idea that there can be this state of absolute purity from the kinds of messy ethical and political entanglements that involve us in our everyday life. That idea of a separate state, that it's attainable, that it ever existed, is problematic. That's when we have a category to put people in that puts those enormous demands on them for the community that makes them the ultimate symbol of innocence for us.
Just stepping back from the subject for a moment, why are you interested in innocence? Was it parenthood that did this to you or something else?
I think I was thrown into an interest for the way that children are conceived socially and the kinds of ways that we talk about children and the expectations we put on them through being a parent. That kind of made it very front of mind. As I talk about in the book, I first started thinking about the moral privilege of innocence in political life around 9/11 and the way that discourse about what kinds of people were innocent and what kinds of people deserved to be protected from war and violence, that innocence played a large part, was kind of bandied about a lot within that. So I think that innocence is invoked in a lot of different contexts to justify all sorts of things politically. I think in our society, the child is the primary site of that discussion continually.
Do you think that we want children to be innocent because we've essentially stopped believing in our own innocence, and so we project innocence onto children?
Well, I think that in a sense, we maintain a belief in our own innocence, and it's the innocence of the other that is radically in doubt. Other people in society. So often that's writ large in terms of the multicultural other. In fact, refugees are a profound worry for a lot of people that they don't have the kind of innocence of intent that we have to take for granted, in a sense, just to get along in society. So it's a way, in a sense, of safekeeping that there is innocence out there, that there's this concrete instantiation of innocence that we can draw on and reflect on and palliate ourselves with.
I suppose in asking the question, what I was thinking of was one of the things in recent history that most struck me was seeing a crowd of people outside a British jail descending upon a police van that might have contained the killers of Jamie Bulger, you know, the little boy who was murdered by two slightly older boys. I don't know whether they actually were in the van or whether it was a decoy van, but they absolutely descended furiously on this van, and it struck me that their behaviour was motivated by a feeling that children of the age of Jamie Bulger's killers are supposed to be innocent, and these kids had failed to be innocent. They'd fallen short of the standards that we expect. They weren't innocent kids, and therefore they were particular objects of our fury.
Yes, and in fact, yeah, children who don't behave in the way that we expect them to, for whatever reasons, and especially in the Bulger case, that's a particularly florid example, these children are seen as monstrous and, yeah, as aberrations, and as betraying that kind of mantle that they have, the role of being innocent and of safeguarding innocence for the community. And Jamie Bulger, on the other hand, the victim, is seen as worried over as that site of innocence. It's kind of a microcosm of the crisis of innocence played out in that field.
Let's look at childhood as it's presented to us in classical philosophy. The 17th century English philosopher John Locke thought that we come into the world without any knowledge at all. We are blank slates, or as he put it in Latin, tabula rasa. What did this mean for his view of children?
Well, children in Locke's philosophy are often appealed to as examples of what humanity is at bottom, the kind of exemplar of humanity. And so he often will say, in order to demonstrate a particular argument, well, let's look at the example of children and how they experience the world. And so their experience with the world, which is unmediated by ideas that are traditional, that come from authority, are in a sense innocent, and their innocence is maintained in the adult as the kind of essence of what the human is.
On ABC Radio National, you're with the Philosopher's Zone, and I'm talking to Joanne Faulkner about innocence. Joanne, we have talked about Locke's view of innocence. What about a later philosopher, an 18th century philosopher, Jean-Jacques Rousseau? How does innocence look in his view of the world?
Rousseau is far more troubled about humanity's relationship to innocence than Locke. And a lot of this comes out of his own experiences in French society. But for Rousseau, innocence is in fact something that is lost as children grow into adults through their interaction with degraded forms of society where there's an excess of privilege and of things that are supposed to satisfy our desires. So for Rousseau, to take it back again to the beginning, for Rousseau, the child is born into a state of innocence, into a state of freedom, and what happens as they grow is that they become enslaved to ideas that are wrong, to inequality, to social systems, political systems that are unequal. And what he wants to do is maintain that state in which humanity is born by rigorously regulating the child's upbringing and the timing of when particular kinds of knowledge are introduced to them so as to cultivate their innocence rather than let it become degraded.
We should say, by the way, that Rousseau himself was an absolutely appalling parent.
Yes, yes. I mean, there's certainly, if you want to be a psychoanalyst about it, there's a certain amount of compensation, perhaps going on in his writings about children, because he continually places himself as the absolute guardian of children's innocence, and yet he had, I think, five children, two illegitimately, who were essentially abandoned by him to the poorhouse. So, yes, he's not a great exemplar in life of how we should treat children.
To look in closer detail at what he's saying, he's trying to preserve innocence, whereas one might want to say that innocence is by its very nature something that you cannot preserve. Because innocence is, as it were, an absence. It's an absence of guilt. It's an absence of any smudges on the clean picture of your soul. And therefore, it's not going to be preserved. That knowledge is the end of innocence.
Well, yes, that particularly prevalent understanding of innocence that is pure is vicarious and it's volatile. It's easily lost. It's quite a demand to put on anyone that they should remain innocent. I think for Rousseau, there's more of a sense with innocence also, though, of a kind of an honesty in one's dealings with others and in relation to oneself. But for him, what is corrupting is our desires, excessive desires, so to want something that's beyond our own needs. So for him, the innocence is about a particular relation to the world and to others that doesn't want more than it can have and more than would make it happy. So there's a way out of that volatility, but it is as soon as we're in society that we're prone to that kind of excessive desire.
We know more about children than we did in Locke's day or Rousseau's day. We're living in a post-Freudian world. Does this affect, importantly, our attitude towards them and towards the idea of innocence?
Well, when we say we know more about children, it's interesting. Children, since Locke's time onward, have become a focus of our attention, of knowledge. So, yeah, when we say that we know more about children, in effect, children have come to be through our engagement, our knowing engagement with them through this intense period of observation. In some spheres, we'll talk about stages that children go through, and there's this kind of minute attention to what children are capable of from certain ages onward. And then there's a sense that at a certain age, they pass into adulthood. So this was a lot less the case before, I guess, the Enlightenment. There was less interest in the child per se.
What's interesting about your answer to the question is you seem to be implying that our attitudes have changed, but not that our knowledge has increased.
Well, our knowledge has revolutionized. I mean, the nature of the kind of knowledge that we have, but it's not an increase in terms of a continuum from not knowing much to knowing a lot. It's more the whole frame of reference, what knowledge about children means. And what it's used for has changed markedly.
One of the things that troubles us enormously today is the sexualization of children. How do you think this issue arises in the controversy in this country about the photographs of Bill Henson?
Yes, well, I do talk about that in the book. I mean, it's interesting that before the Bill Henson controversy took place, there was already a background for it to fit into. In 2006, the Australia Institute wrote a report on the sexualisation of children in the Australian media, and this was picked up by the media, and it frames a problem, kind of identifies a problem that children are both targeted by the media to consume things that they don't need, and that they are also used to sell products that are beyond their understanding, that are for adults, and that this, through being represented in adult ways and for adult purposes, they're being sexualized, and that this also prepares the ground for essentially, it grooms them for pedophiles. So it was quite an emotionally intense portrayal of where children fit into popular culture. And since then, there was a Senate inquiry into the representation of children, and on the back of this, the Henson controversy occurred. So there were already people in the media and in the community looking out for sexualized children. And so when this invitation sent round with that particular image on it that is now famous, there was already a ready place to receive that as sexualized.
Is there an ideal solution to the issues that you raise in your book? I mean, is there a balanced concept of children and of innocence that we should be working towards?
I think there's not an ideal solution, but what there is there are methods that we can bring to looking at these debates. So what I urge in the book is that we are attentive to the ways in which our framing of children as innocents is part of a way that adults, in fact, negotiate their own identity as political subjects, and that view of childhood participates in the way that we can think through our own political identity, our political subjectivity.
Well, this causes me to ask, you say that you started thinking about the question of innocence as a result of 9/11. And where did innocence come into 9/11? Was it because we saw the victims? It was very difficult not to see the victims of 9/11 simply as victims. And of course, they were a bunch of people. Some of them were probably quite unpleasant and they did all sorts of dreadful things in their private lives. But when we saw them in those circumstances, we just saw them as victims and therefore as innocent.
Yes, and we saw them indeed as victims who had nothing to do with the kinds of grievances that those terrorists had, because they were living and working in you know, the innocent city that's worlds away from that life. I mean, this idea that we can separate ourselves from worldly events is a kind of, I guess, sleight of hand that the idea of innocence allows to take place. But more than that, what interested me was the way that framing victims, those victims as innocent, and then extending that to Western citizens in general, endorsed a way of governing that meant that it lessened participation, it took away civil rights, and it was framed in a similar way to the way that we think of our responsibility to children, to protect them, to not worry them with things that might concern them because it's too complex or difficult for them. And that is the way that governments were treating citizens at that time.
Just finally, I recently told a very, very close friend of mine that I thought of her as innocent. And I meant that as a compliment. It was a reflection on openness, her lack of guile. But she was slightly taken aback by the compliment, or at least surprised by it. Do you think we can describe other people without their being taken aback as innocent?
Well, I think that in a sense that the task to be done is to reinterpret what innocence means, to kind of recuperate perhaps the less victimising or patronising senses that accrue to it through its association to children. Yes, so if we can think of innocence as being honest and direct engagement, then it takes away, I guess, the moral resonances and the idea that if someone's innocent, then they're not responsible for themselves.
Well, to explore more about the issues of innocence, you can seek out The Importance of Being Innocent by Joanne Faulkner. Joanne, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Alan.
Don't forget that you can go to our website to comment on this week's show and to share with us your views on the subject of innocence, or simply to listen to it again, or to listen to any of our shows. The innocents behind The Philosopher's Zone are the producer Kyla Slavin and the sound engineer Charlie McCune. I'm Alan Saunders. Back next week.